Can you believe it is December 20th? I feel like we all deserve a round of applause. We're so close to the finish line. I don't know about you, but this is usually the time when the excitement really starts to build in my heart, right? Like December 20th, Christmas is just around the corner. School break is here, holidays are coming, gifts are starting to pile up under the tree, all my neighbors have their lights on. This is the time, you know, when we start to walk a little bit lighter on our toes, we greet strangers with a smile and good tidings. This year feels a bit dampened, doesn't it? Yeah, we've almost made it through 2020, but many of us are still feeling the bruises of a tough year, and many are facing into an uncertain future in the new year. Let's be honest, there's not as much to look forward to this year, is there? We won't be packed together for our Christmas Eve services. We might not get to see many of our loved ones over the break. We're definitely not experiencing the joyful connection between ourselves and strangers because we're all wearing masks and we're all keeping our distance. There's like a undeniable heavy cloud that hangs over the season. And I think we're all feeling it. And I wonder if maybe, amidst the cloudy darkness, we might be primed to tune into the Christmas story in a fresh way. Now, don't get me wrong. The story of Christ's coming is beaming with hope and joy and new life. And I believe that all the normal hype and passion of the Christmas season allows us to receive the story in powerful ways. But that's just not the mode I'm in this year. And I imagine many of you are feeling the same. But let's see what happens when we enter into this story with fresh eyes, looking from a fresh vantage point. What do we see? What do we experience? This morning, we're going to read from the Magnificat, from Luke chapter 1. This is among the most familiar Christmas Bible passages. It's Mary's song of praise and rejoicing as she receives the amazing news that she's going to give birth to the Son of God. And it's a song that pairs so well with the normal joy and wonder and enthusiasm that we're used to at Advent. But maybe there's a bit more bite to this passage than we're used to noticing. Let's give it a read. My soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God, my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors. Do you hear the familiar echoes of celebration? Praises to God for his mercy and care, the blessings of the Mighty One. Do you also hear the angst? There's an undertow to this passage that seems to be rising to the surface a bit more for me this year. Scattering the proud, dismissing tyrants, bringing down rulers, and putting the humble in their place. Sending away the rich and filling the hungry. Maybe we're used to the heartwarming message of God having favor on a modest young woman, but there is truly a sharpness to this song. I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm feeling extra prickly this season, but I'm feeling the edge of this passage. But I'm not alone. What it says is the language, not of sweet maidens, It speaks of dethroning the mighty and exalting the lowly, of filling the hungry and sending the rich away empty. Mary's praise to God is a revolutionary battle cry. Mary is declaring that God is on the move. He's doing a good work. And whatever it is that God is about to do, it will be good news for the poor and bad news for the proud and the rich. The wondrous message that God was going to elevate this humble girl, it was a sign that many others like her would also be lifted up, and that many others would be brought down. The good news that God was coming into the world was loaded with a reality that he was not coming to leave things as they are. No, he was coming to flip things over, to disrupt the social order. God was coming to care for those who have been overlooked and ignored. God was coming to set things right. These are the seeds of the gospel. Gospel in the way it was originally used. You know, gospel, as you know, was a political term. It was a declaration of good news for the people. Not simply a warm slogan that could be tossed on a billboard, but a declaration that something was happening that would shape the fate of the community. The gospel song of Mary is a declaration of hope, mercy, blessing, and disruption, upheaval, revolution. This is the song we are invited to sing. We are invited to join the chorus with Mary to declare to the world, to declare to ourselves, that God has come to set things right. As Walter Brueggemann says, it would take practice to learn to sing this way, to sing about the revolution that God is undertaking that centers in Jesus. But unless we sing and live that song, we settle against the gospel for the world the way it is. The news of Advent is that God is on the loose and appearing soon in unexpected places. People like us may find such a song a jolt, because we have settled for a more timid God. But this is the one shown to us. Maybe this Christmas, amidst the dampened celebration, we can learn to sing along with Mary, to declare the hope of the mighty God who has come to bring justice to the lowly and to lift those who are held down. But we must remember, this is the song of the lowly. This is the song of the poor, not the rich. This is the song of the humble, not the proud. As we learn to sing this song and call out for God's work of flipping things around, we must call out for that work in our own lives as well. This is why we must learn to sing this song. We must not allow ourselves to settle into the patterns of this world. We need to learn the lyrics of this revolution so that the song can settle deep in our hearts and can resound in our lives. And like we talked about last week, this song will keep our imagination stirring. As we feel unsettled with the way things are, God's Spirit will bring to mind new possibilities, new opportunities for the power dynamics to be flipped around. If we embrace that song, we will be brought back to a very simple question time and time again, and that is, how does this happen? How does the revolution actually emerge in our lives and in our world? And to answer this, we're going to look back to the words of the prophet Isaiah. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. To us, a child is born. To us, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. The coming of Christ as a child shows us the essence of the revolution. The Messiah has come to upend the system at the hands of a child. This is the way that the Almighty One brings down rulers and scatters the proud, as a child. This is the way God restores the humble and cares for the poor, as a child. This is the way that God shows up to declare that the revolution has begun, as a child. It is those in the darkness who see the great light. Those who feel the heaviness of the world, those who see the burdens of the oppressed and feel the weight of injustice in our society, to these people, the child is born. Are we among those people? Are we weighed down by the darkness? Do we see the light? Do we see the way that God has come? Do we see the way that God has called us to live? As Jürgen Moltmann says, the kingdom of peace comes through a child, and liberation is bestowed on the people who become as children, disarmingly defenseless, disarming through their defenselessness and making others defenseless because they themselves are so disarming. This is how the revolution will emerge in our lives when we take up the way of the child. See, those who see the light are called to live into the light. We are invited to embrace Christ's way of revolution, to take up the way of the child. We are invited to surrender autonomy, to learn the way of dependence. Dependence on God and dependence on God's family, the church. We work with God to disperse power when we release what we have, when we freely give and share. We work with God to scatter pride by embracing the way of humility. We are invited to submit our achievements, to submit our accomplishments, to submit our authority and to locate that within the collective community. You see, the way of the child is the way of interdependence. God invites us to imagine a world where the playing field is leveled and we learn to give and receive from one another. Where we do not hoard, we share. And where we are not self-sufficient, but we are mutually dependent. This is the message of hope for the proud and the lowly. It declares to us that there is a better way. And this message, it penetrates our current dark reality, and it reminds us that one day all darkness will be gone. The child of light has come, and he will come again. One day his light will be the only reality that we know. But until that time, we keep chasing the light. We embrace the ways of the child as our way to participate in the revolution, even now. But is this really possible here and now? Or is it just a dream? There's nothing against dreams if they are good ones. The prophet gave the people in the darkness and us this unforgettable dream. We should remain true to it. The story of Israel is a story of people holding on to a dream, anticipating the one who would set all things right. They could only see a shadowy outline of the coming Savior. But to us, Mary and the apostles of the New Testament, they proclaim the person himself. He is Jesus Christ, the child born to the humble young virgin. He is the liberator who came to us and remains with us. He is God with us, God among us, God in us. So we continue to dream a good dream for our world because we know that Christ has birthed that dream in our hearts. He came to show us God in person. He came to show us love lived perfectly. He came to show us the power of the revolution, restoring hope to the broken. He gave his life to disarm the powers of evil. He was raised to life to show us that the dream is possible, and he sent his Spirit to live in us, to help us join in. We can follow him. We can embrace the ways of the child and make the dream of peace and liberty visible in our world. Could it be possible that in the bleakness of 2020, we might uncover new depth in the mystery of Advent? Maybe as we feel the frustration of restrictions and limitations, we might find ourselves paying attention to the injustice and unrest that continues to dominate our world. Can we learn to make Mary's song of revolution our anthem, a rallying cry of the revolution that is breaking into the darkest of seasons? Let's not be afraid to dream a good dream, to imagine the ways that Christ is working to disrupt the patterns of our lives in order to bring about something even greater. Let's dream about the ways our church, our city, our world could be transformed as we allow the light to break in. And as we learn to walk in the revolutionary ways of Christ the child.
So how do we dream a good dream for the world when it seems like there are so many things that are falling apart, when there are so many broken dreams in the world? Well, I think that when we experience the reality of broken dreams, whether it's something as small as our Christmas plans being canceled, or something as deep and wide as the loss of a loved one or the loss of a job, there is latent in those broken dreams the potential for greater compassion and generosity. Because as Mary's song states, the revolution takes hold in the people who know loss, who have experienced that life is not fair, who are empty and in need of being filled. It means that they have to look beyond the circumstances of their lives for something new. Their emptiness opens them up to be filled by something other than what is right before them. And COVID has emptied us out too. We have been emptied of our everyday rituals, and the rituals of the weeks and the years that in the past have helped sustain us. We miss things that really matter, and we look forward to when we'll have them back again. But this emptying has also helped us recalibrate and maybe appreciate what really matters. But this is also the time when things are being revealed that are not just or fair. And those who have been well acquainted with loss and injustice are now taking center stage. We are recognizing that those who are aging in our culture are not valued as they should be. Many seniors are lonely, and those who care for them are not valued or paid enough. We're dropping the ball when it comes to the seniors in our culture. Racism is being revealed not just in the States, but in our own country and province. Last week, racist comments were made about our own chief medical health officer by anti-mask protesters. Racism is alive and well here too. Those who are most vulnerable have been left behind by our economic system. This week, you might have heard that it was announced that Mackenzie Scott, the former wife of Jeff Bezos, has given away $4 billion to nonprofits struggling because of COVID. She said that this pandemic has taken money from the most vulnerable who receive help through these nonprofits, while the rich just get richer. Those who are losing access to these services are mostly women and children, and most of them are people of color. People with mental health issues are suffering more because of isolation and the weight of the pandemic on services that they really need. And we could name many more issues of injustice that are being uncovered by this pandemic. And so this pandemic is helping us realize that this world is broken and unjust for many people, and mostly for people who can't fight those injustices on their own. And yet, in the middle of this, Jesus is still being incarnated. Jesus is coming. That is the promise of Advent. But still, in the middle of this, Jesus is being incarnated. Jesus is coming. That's the promise of Advent. In the middle of this, and actually in some ways because of this, God is inviting us to dream about a different way. And Jesus reveals that new way. Jesus, instead of hoarding what he has, pours it out for the sake of the world. Have you ever been to a birth or had a baby? Think about that process for a little bit. It is messy. It hurts. And babies come out squished and covered with goo. And that's how the God of the universe came into the world. He poured out his power and became completely dependent. His revolution starts with humility. And that's the clue as to how we allow this new dream to take root in us. We follow the ways of humility, of Jesus' way of self-emptying. And the practice of generosity is a way to pour out what we have been given in order to fill others, but also to make room in ourselves to be filled again, to make room for Jesus to be incarnated again in us. So generosity does double duty. It spreads around resources that are needed. It sows seeds of happiness and security in the world, but it also helps loosen our grip on things that might stand in the way of us following in the humble way of Jesus. Generosity helps us live in dependence on God and allows us to experience the interdependency that we were made to have with one another. It makes room in us for Christ to come, but it also allows us to be a part of what God is up to in the world. It's brilliant. So, this week for our generosity practice, we're going to give some money away. We've talked about giving time and attention to practice generosity, but there's something really important and central about giving our money away, because money has such a hold in most of our lives. Now, some of us can only give a little bit, and some of us can give a lot, and most of us can give more than what we think we can, but the amount is not the point. The practice of generosity is. So here's your challenge. Think about the injustices in the world. Think about one that really bothers you, and then find a reputable organization that addresses this injustice and commit to financing that organization. 50 years ago, my dad did his medical residency in Haiti. And when he was there, he helped out in a little foster home run by two women in the north of Haiti. And this home provided medical care and help for the most vulnerable of Haitian kids, those with TB or disabilities or other congenital health issues. Now, my dad couldn't stay in Haiti, but when he got home, he started supporting the women and kids financially and committed to doing so for many years. In fact, my mom and dad still support that little foster home today. In 2010, when the earthquake hit Haiti, one little boy showed up at the home. He had lost his whole family, and he was so traumatized by his experience that he wouldn't speak. Sometime after he arrived, he was invited to go with some of the workers to Port-au-Prince to pick up another little boy, and he decided to go along. So they picked up this other little boy and were headed back to the home. And as they were driving along, the first little boy turned to the second little boy and said to him, "You are going to heaven." Now, the bulk of the work done to bring heaven to earth for these little boys to create a new dream for the most vulnerable is done by the Haitian workers on the ground. But my dad's money has helped create a safe place for these little ones. He couldn't stay in Haiti, but he could support the women who could. It was a way of staying connected to a cause that he really cared about. Maybe you care about prenatal health or orphaned kids or the foster care system. Maybe you care about indigenous issues or domestic abuse or racial injustice or food insecurity. Find an organization that helps address those issues and throw your hat into the ring by giving them your money. We have two amazing organizations that we're supporting through our Advent giving. Hands at Work supports communities living in poverty in Zambia, And most of the on-the-ground work done there is done by Zambian women who take in vulnerable kids and look after them. Sons and Daughters supports foster families here in Saskatoon. Being a foster parent is really hard work, and most people can't sustain the work over the long haul. But Sons and Daughters is working to create support systems to help sustain those on the front lines who are providing support and stability to vulnerable kids in our city. You may not be able to be a foster parent, but you can help support those who can. There are many stories both of these organizations can tell of bringing heaven to earth, and supporting them financially is a way to be a part of that. So pick a cause, pick an organization. And here are a couple of pro tips for choosing. If you're choosing an organization or a cause that is happening in another country, choose one where the majority of the employees and leadership are citizens of that country. Do your homework so that you know you are supporting a cause that cares about justice and equality in their own organization. Choose an organization that really needs your resources, where the bulk of your money is going where it is needed most, and not to overhead costs or to bigwig CEOs. Now, that being said, just because there are organizations that you can't trust doesn't mean there aren't lots that you can. So don't let cynicism keep you from giving your money to really good things. And if you are already giving regularly to causes that you care about, and I know many of you are, here's another idea for being generous. Start putting money away every month. Keep a fund that you can use to help people as you come across needs that maybe only you can see and respond to. You don't get a tax write-off for this, and I would encourage you as much as you can to give this money away in secret. It will be a great way not only to share generously and experience the joy of doing so, but also to make sure you're giving simply because God has asked you to, and not to get recognition. Ask for God to bring people into your path who need it, and share liberally and graciously when you can, remembering that this is an expression of gratitude for all of the good things that God has given you. This week, let's give some cash away. Invest financially in God's new dream for the world by financing causes and organizations that fight injustice and bring heaven to earth. I promise it's going to be a great return on investment.